Ah, g'day, policy heads. This is Policy versus Politics with Jared and Sheila. So we're finally on the road and making our first podcast for the year. As thankfully, Sheila's touched back down from America, so now we can finally get on with it. As many people are asking me, Jared, when are you starting? I'm like, I'm waiting for Sheila to get back. I can't do it all by myself. So I just wanted to say g'day, and I'll pass it over to Sheila to really kind of give you an idea of what this whole show is about.
Yeah, so our podcast, Politics versus Policy, what we aim to do is to discuss around policies without the policies being highly politicised, which when we first started Politics versus Policy, what we have observed in the public is that when we talk about policy, it's hard to separate it from our own political perspectives. And what we want to do is try and be objective, but at the same time, not fully separate it, but how we can maintain a good and productive discussions around policy using different political lenses.
So, yeah, so in effect, like, some of our episodes will be about the, like, political theory about how we see, like, the social decline of trust in democracy, or some episodes mainly will be surrounded by policy itself, where we'll, such as the Religious Discrimination Act, we'll be talking about that soon, and how we'll look at that from a apolitical point of view. So we won't be putting anything on it, we'll just be discussing the policy itself. But then at the end of the episode, we might bring in some more of a thoughts on it, and using some variety of guests that we are able to attain through the generosity of friendships with like really nice lecturers and teachers and students abroad.
Yeah, and we hope that we as policy heads, we could shift away from the us versus them mindset into more of, you know, politics and policy objective thinking. How we adopt empathy without leaving objectivity and...
Well, all right. So this episode is really going to be about us in general. It's really going to be kind of introducing who we are, and kind of what we're about, and then we'll move on to certain policies and political theories in the coming episodes. But we kind of really just wanted to introduce ourselves, because some of you may know Sheila really well and some of you may know me really well, but you don't really know us as two heads together. So I just wanted to kind of pass it off to Sheila and kind of introduce yourself.
Sure. So... as you know, my name is Sheila. I'm doing Master of Public Policy and Management at the University of Melbourne. My bachelor's degree was in fine arts, which was very different in many ways. I am now focusing on the democracy in the era of new and social media. So I'm interested to look at how big data and all... you know, the new dynamics of how we interact with each other would affect the way we define representative democracy. I also do economics and social impact assessment. I'm now working as a research assistant, focusing in media politics at the University of Melbourne. I've done some consulting works, international youth engagement at NGOs, and also... a little bit of research background at a student-based think tank, doing policy analysis. What I enjoy doing is reading politics history with Jared, you know, reading philosophy and social issues. Well, having a nice hot coffee with Jared at a local cafe. If you're in Melbourne, you would know how good it is. If you don't, you should visit. Would you like to introduce yourself, Jared?
I'm pretty easy to introduce. I did a degree of creative arts drama at Deakin University with a... it was pretty fun. it was actually really great. And I also did political science in there as well, a little bit of history. So I'm also doing a Master of Public Policy and Management at the University of Melbourne along with Sheila. So I'm basically... a whole range of policies, to be honest, and I never really find a policy area that I'm really quite bored with. So my areas mainly, my true passions mainly lie in like Indigenous policy, international monetary policy, economic policy, climate change policy and so on and so forth. But everything I just enjoy policy as a whole. Grown up on a lot of political shows like Chasers War and everything. So I've been very into politics since a very young age. And hopefully I'll get into there once this master's is done and start making some actual good change that I want to see in the world, as Gandhi used to say it. But that's me in a nutshell. Anyone who really knows me knows that I love a good laugh and love a good coffee or a beer and a chat about anything or everything. And yeah, that's me. That's Jared.
Sounds good. So, as Jared has already mentioned, in the next episode, we're looking to discuss more on theories of policy, but also the real analysis on specific policies, in which we would invite actual experts who are working in the field, dealing with the certain policies that we would be talking about. Mm. Anyways, so as a part of our culture in this podcast, how we would introduce each other and how we introduce our guest speakers would be through this fun little game that we invented. So the way we play this game is that we ask each other, not questions, but it's more of a game similar to Would You Rather, but instead of an activity, you choose this or that, but there's also some questions that you don't choose this or that, but you choose whether you agree or disagree.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's a mix of different types of questions, but you'll get it once you listen to it. So
yeah, and I think like with these games, because you're either saying one or the other and you're not really explaining yourself, that, you know, you don't put a judgment on what one person says. Just maybe connect with us later on and be like, why do you believe that? Yeah. Because, you know, this is a place of not judging a person by one thing that they've said that you might not agree with, that we will discuss later on in Social Decline and Trust in Democracy, or in another when we're discussing social media about how online you can now feel that you can disagree with someone instantly and then not really understand the other side. But this is more of a place where we're going to say it. And, you know, if you want to know anything more, definitely try and connect with us. We're happy to take questions on messengers
or have a chat
in general, always around. And just if you want to keep up with those episodes, definitely subscribe or you know, make sure you're tuning into the podcast and making sure. Yeah, no, it's great discussion, and maybe one day we'll have our audience as well in to do more episodes and talking with them as well face-to-face. Anyway, Sheila, do you want to take it away with the game?
Yes. Okay, so I'll ask the questions first and then Jared would start. All right, Jared, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll play 3, 2, 1. Trump or Boris Johnson?
Trump.
Constitutional monarchy or republic?
Yeah, no, constitutional monarchy.
Extreme authoritarianism or extreme anarchism?
Extreme authoritarianism. Extreme authoritarianism.
Okay. Be the moderator of the presidential debate or moderate your family meal arguments?
Oh, no. Moderate family meal arguments. It's so much more interesting half the time. It gets more brutal.
Carbon tax or carbon license?
Tax.
Tony Abbott or Scott Morrison?
All right, Tony Abbott.
Okay. Elections should have private donors. Agree or disagree?
Disagree. Definitely disagree on that one. That is something that, yeah.
That's one of the essays that you did last year.
That was one of my papers were on. All right, Sheila, here is something for you.
Oh, it's my turn now.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right. Obama or Trudeau?
Obama.
The freer the market, the freer the people. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
All right. Raise the minimum wage, but less employment rate. Or lower minimum wage, but more employment rate?
Or
higher employment rate, I'd say.
Or say hard options. Lower the minimum wage, but more employment rate.
Oh, okay. Public broadcasters, such as the ABC, should they be government funded?
Yes. Agree.
All right. This one for you. Can you be moral without being religious?
Yes.
Is charity better than social security as means to helping the generally disadvantaged?
No. Disagree.
University education should be fully subsidised by the government.
Agree.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope that gives everyone an idea of who we are in a way and, where, and where we are. That's the intriguing part of why did they say that? But no, I really like that because it kind of gives you that, well, I'm intrigued by your choices.
Yeah, your
there.
Choice, yeah.
Especially on the university.
Well, I was more intrigued by your choice on the carbon tax and carbon license.
Because
Australia. Anyways.
Oh, boy. All right. So we're moving on now. Mm. And I kind of just want to bring it back to what this episode is about, other than just introducing us. Because we mentioned at the start that we kind of created this podcast to really separate politics from the policy itself, because we believe that policy is trivialized and that the politics is taken over mainly as the main aspect that everyone sees from rural to remote to urban, and that's all people really care about.
Yeah, and we're not saying that, you know, we can fully separate politics from policy because it's completely impossible. But what we want to do is try and unravel policies objectively. Yeah, so looking through a variety of policies as solutions or strategies, and maybe as strategies for politics, but it's something that we don't want to wear our political ideologies hat when we look at different policies. And but before we start talking about these things, so what does public policy mean to you?
Well, that's actually a really easy and hard question at the same time in a certain respect, because policy can be very, very hard to pin down. I see that policy is a tool that is used by the government to actually fix problems that they can see and that people identify within the community. Especially growing up in the Northern Territory, there are many places in terms of Indigenous policy, economic policy, climate policy, just far-reaching from local government to state to, well, they're not really, they can't have state because they're not really a state, but we won't get into that now, and to federal, about what problems we can see and what problems we need to fix. And plain and simple, just the tool that the government needs to use when they identified a problem or and the community has identified a problem and they're like, we need this fixed. But that's really what policy is to me. It's nothing obscure. It's nothing that we really need to philosophize. It's the hardest part about policy is when you're actually thinking about what route to take. It's not what the problem is. We can clearly see the problem, but it's the route that we take in order to fix that problem that can be the most, the hardest part of policy in itself. Say if you're talking about tax, you've got so many different routes to take in order to solve the massive amount of problems we might have in terms of tax policy. Don't talk about franking credits. but that's mainly where I believe policy lies, is that it's the main tool to use in order to fix problems that we see, and how we define a problem is really up to the community. What about yourself?
Well, kind of similar in many ways. So problem-solving strategies, definitely.
Definitely.
How, as government, they strategize how to look at a problem and how to identify the, you know, what's going on in that problem and how does that affect people and what to do about it. And I think the past year I've been also, because I'm looking at so many different political issues, well, or policy issues.
You're very lucky because you've got multiple, because you're from Indonesia, you've got multiple areas to look at it from in terms of how governments go about dealing with things.
And comparing it to how, you know, in Australia we deal with things as well.
And
in many ways it's kind of, there is a similarity between policies and economics. You know, when we talk about economics, it's about effective and efficient allocation of resources. The way we look at policies is like efficient and effective allocation of interventions. So in what way does the government want freedom in certain areas, giving the public freedom to just fix your own problems?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, okay, these problems, we need to intervene in these things because it's needed. And that's where it gets complex, because different political ideologies would come in and be like, oh, you know, this is not how we do things. And
bringing the political ideologies into the arena with the policy, it's like sometimes they look to own a certain aspect.
Yeah.
And at times you and I have talked about that neither party owns a policy consistently.
Yeah.
Is because you can't really I can't walk in and be like, look, that's my policy because this is my affiliation with this political ideology. Right. It's like that's not how policy should work. It's about what the problem is in the community or in the system that, say, another policy is built, and actually coming together and dealing with that.
Yeah.
Because it that's where people lose it with policy, that when all the macro political affiliations latch onto it, that's when things can get very, very messy. And that's when people switch off.
Yeah.
I feel.
Which is interesting, because coming back to what you said about, you know, what public policy means to you, and, you know, policies as a means to fix problems. But to what extent, like, is there a boundary to which we need to separate policies from political ideologies? Because do you reckon policies, are they actually a means to fix problems, or are they just political strategies to win constituents or to satisfy their people? Which, if policies are for the people, for the public anyway, is that justifiable?
Look, you can bring, I have to say that you can separate political ideologies from policy when it's a significant issue. And also depends on what time of the election cycle, I believe, it might be as well. Because at the end of the day in Australia, we have the 3-year federal election cycle. And it consistently feels in the past couple of years that every election year that we've just been throwing money at it, being like, this is what we're going to do, and everyone's like, this is what that political party wants, this is what that political party wants. But sometimes we actually really lose, I know it's going to sound like such a centrist value to everyone, but we lose the scope of what the actual policy problems are at points, because it's become so politicized. And I believe we the boundary is there, but it's just been smashed in some sort of way that everything's always intermingled. And we kind of need to bring that back, where we would have that long-term vision for policy itself. Like, it's going to sound ironic, but the last time I actually really kind of felt like there was long-term policy was back in 2013 with the Gillard Rudd Tony Abbott election, where, you know, it kind of felt like there were actual policies. But since then, it kind of feels like there's just been consistently nothing in terms of long term, the NDIS, the NBN. It feels like we've kind of lost what is going on. What are we doing with the health system? And sometimes when I watch campaigns of both parties, and even of the Greens and the One Nation, the minor parties, because I believe they're very important at times as well in influencing large parties, that their policies sometimes aren't really showing me where their long-term aims are. That's what I meant, aims, not games. Because there was... I'm kind of moving away from the actual question of, like, do I believe there's a boundary to policies and politics, which, as I've established, I do believe there is. But we really just need to identify problems, come together as a community in terms of local, especially with these bushfires, and state or territory, to really understand what policies are and how that's affecting them, because I believe we're all kind of consistently watching the big man in Canberra and we've kind of lost the business down the street. Or
Which is also the challenge because, you know, coming together as a community, how do we define the public or, you know, how do we define the community? And it's also the one of the perks and challenges with democracy as well, because these polarizations, these disagreements and why we can't really get things done in a fast pace, because there's always disagreements. And the more we see disagreements, that means we can actually, that there is actual mechanism for grievance. But yeah, that's where it gets all complex, because a level of transparency
Look,
expect.
In terms of the public, from, because, you know, I'm still outside the in the public sector. I'm not working in the public sector, and it can be very hard working in the public sector, because I think we've had this discussion as well. We have a lot of discussions about how some forms of the public, not all public, but, and some people have agreed with me when I've like polled this in some sort, that the government is now looked at in some forms as a customer service operator. And instead of like the government actually, and the government's kind of adopted that role as well, because it's basically trying its best to work for the public as best it can, but it loses the sight of the actual policies itself, and what it actually needs to do. And what I believe that the public needs to do is kind of re-engage as best they can with, and not just in a social media way, but like by establishing themselves within, like going to party meetings, going to community meetings, and really getting out in there and re-engaging, because since we've lost that kind of community aspect, we've now only got that federal and state kind of aspect where we kind of engage with politics, and that's kind of where it gets polarized. Because if you're not engaged, I believe, in kind of the local level and with like local policy, like, you know, you know, we were talking about the other day, the Yarra saving.
I think
we were talking with the council member. She was talking about saving the Yarra pool.
Fitzroy.
Fitzroy. Like, and how locals really gotten engaged with that.
Right.
And this is coming from me, and people can totally disagree with that. And but if you're not really engaged on all three levels, and you're just engaged in the federal level, that's where polarization can really occur. So that's why I say, if you bring it back to the, like, the local level, to the state level first, really kind of get engaged with those policies, and just listen to the other side. Like, there was a good couple of years.
I so agree with that.
We need to stop really kind of looking at policy as a you versus me. Or, you know, back in the, I think it was 2014 election, it was the East-West Link versus public transport. And it's like, it's not that, you can simplify it down to that. And that's sometimes what governments and oppositions do in order to make sure that people understand and have a better idea of what issues are going on in an election. But at the same time, you can't, that's significant. That's a very long-term policy that we're going to have to deal with. And in my terms, it was not so simplified as public transport versus a new road. It's a what impact will these policies have for the long-term future of, will my public transport, like, be better in the long term? Will I have more trains, more consistent, frequent trains, more room on trains because they're so more frequent, or will trams be much better rather than there's a road? Or that, you know, everyone knows what the East-West Link thing is going on, where, you know, it would get you from A to B easier. I understand that. And that was significant as well because, you know, Melbourne cars, and it's gridlocked. It's gridlocked at times, and you really need to, like, oh, God, really plan ahead. Like, coming into the city today, I was like, oh, boy, how am I going to get there on time? And so you really need to plan ahead, and I understand that. But the long term, it's like, if we built that infrastructure, what would we lose? So it's more about you think of the long term of this will get more cars off the road, which will help with maybe climate change, and B, it will make sure that public transport infrastructure is much better, and that's greater for the community, and that is great also for safety with the railway crossings. And then the other flip was, look, we are able to get around Melbourne easier. Gridlock has more of less pressure on it. Oh, sorry, I'm not going to say gridlock has less pressure, but the Melbourne roads have less pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it back, I believe that policy is not a strategic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I believe it's actually identifying the issues.
Right, right. Well, and coming back to, you know, how I explained how we look at policies long term and, you know, it's not us versus them kind of mindset that we want to approach. It all comes down to the question of how much public policy is personalized, because we want to do, the target of public policy is always the people, especially in democratic countries. And
which is on
how much of the impact or personalized, and how much should we take it personally? Which is interesting because when you mentioned about the role of the government in providing the needs, and when you mentioned about public sector trying to act as a customer service, in the book that we both read, the Francis Fukuyama's Identity, it mentioned briefly about how the role of the government shifts over time with the shifting culture as well of the larger public. Back then, the government, what they want to do is to provide them with the needs of the people physically and materially. But now it's more of, because what we need as a person is a sense of dignity, a sense of recognition, a sense of identity that we want to belong in this country. We want to be accepted in this country. And Fukuyama mentions a little bit about how the government should or has shifted their role in the society as the provider of dignity. So almost all the policy issues or political issues even, they involve a certain degree of the need of recognition, like the problem of, you know, gender identity, gender equality, and
income equality.
And refugees, climate change policy, and all that, which we will discuss next week in our episode with Dr. Mark Triffitt. We're going to be discussing about democracy in the 21st century, the declining political trust, and the question of legitimacy. We're going to talk about all these things and how they relate to the declining political trust, and what are the possible ways we can approach it, and maybe how public policy should respond to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're starting to wrap up now on our first episode. But yeah, I think just as a last pointer, a couple book recommendations for anyone who just likes to have a nice read. There was the one that we just mentioned, Identity, the Demand for Dignity and Politics of Resentment by
Francis Fukuyama.
He
talks a lot about identity politics, which is interesting.
It was very. It's a very, very good book. I cannot put it down, to be honest. But also, a really.
You're welcome, Jared.
Yeah, thank you, Sheila. But another book that I really love, and I don't think you've read it yet. I've been telling you to read it for a good couple of years now. Is The Fourth Revolution?
Oh, that's right.
That's a really good book at really understanding how government has really evolved from city states to nation states to welfare states, and now how we're entering what they describe as a fourth revolution, in where they discuss where we're now going through a period or a dual crisis of political legitimacy or political effectiveness. And it's the fourth revolution really crystallizes the scope of the crisis and kind of puts forward ideas for the future and how we as individuals need to think about, particularly in Western countries, where the debt is becoming unsustainable due to rising populations and also rising aging populations, right, and how the government's going to have to deal with the healthcare and the welfare crisis going forward. Mm-hmm. So I really think that's a great book to understand for yourself personally, to be like, what is, as an individual, what is a great long-term fiscal policy, or what is a great healthcare policy? Because these really things, apart from climate change, we really need to deal with, because as we all know, people aren't going to stop having children.
Yeah.
Just like that, unless a massive thing happens that we probably can't foresee in this podcast. But yeah, that's a fantastic book.
Yeah. Another one book that we...
So many books.
Another one book, just one more,
yeah.
That we based off our chat episode,
yeah,
from is a book by Kingdon. It's called Agendas, Alternatives and Public Policies.
Mm.
It's a very... it speaks upon a very basic framework of, yeah, how public policies are made and how, you know, if they are blended with political strategies, how they would work in a very transparent and pragmatic way that you understand the way it works, which is really interesting. And if you want to know more about the trivialized policy media politics, read that book.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, some, like the books that we're recommending, some are not that dense,
yeah,
and we're trying to keep them as simple as possible,
simple, yeah,
just in case we have readers who aren't really familiar with policy, and that's not to a fault of their own,
mm-hmm,
and just want to engage a little bit more. Like, these aren't like books that are a silver bullet to, especially the Fourth Revolution or,
yeah,
identity. They're not silver bullets to problems that we have now, but they're great books in generating thoughts, mm-hmm, about moving forward as human beings, because we may have to be more engaged with democracy in the near future than we ever have been before.
Yeah.
Especially entering this new age of technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to post those books on our social media for you to have a look, and maybe if you want to get some of the books that we recommended. And also please stay tuned for the poll that we're going to publish soon. So every... just a week before we start our episodes with experts discussing about policies, we would publish a poll where you can engage with them and look at the questions that we post. They usually are very in line with what we're going to discuss during the podcast episode. So please stay tuned. This week we're going to publish that, the poll about democracy in the 21st century, declining political trust and question of legitimacy.
Beautiful. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into our first podcast. Hope you're able to stick around. It's our kind of first time doing a podcast, so we're going to try and learn as we go and try and keep more engaged.
Yeah, so subscribe.
Yeah, subscribe.
And share our episodes.
And share our episodes. And if you want to ever have a chat with us, we're...
Yeah, contact us
definitely. I'd love to have chats with people about...
Yeah, we love having
really
great
anything.
Discussions.
And if you've got any ideas of policies that you would like us to discuss, definitely just send us a message and we'll look into it and we'll get back to you as well, because...
We're approachable.
We're
friendly.
I just love people. I just love talking to people. That's my jam. Anyway, thanks, guys, and hope you have a fantastic day, and I'll catch you policy heads later. Signing off from me at here at the University of Melbourne. Bye.
Bye.